Mobius's Code by Francis Rosenfeld. Jennifer 2.0.0. Because it was the weekend, Jennifer went to visit her mother, like she usually did. They had lunch together, caught up on what happened during the week, and the latest gossip. Jennifer's mother brought up her favorite subjects, which were that Jennifer should eat better and her boyfriend was not good enough for her. She topped up the conversation with offers to match up her daughter with a number of suitable bachelors who were serious about a relationship. Mom, stop trying to fix me up, don't you remember what happened last time? Adelaide's son is wonderfully attentive, so fond of his mother, surely you couldn't find anything wrong with him. Of course he's fond of his mother. He talked about nothing else the entire evening. You are too picky, dear, that's your problem. Keep it up and I'm never going to see you settled down. You wouldn't dare deprive me of grandchildren. They would be my children, Mom. It's not like I'm having them for you. Why do you have to always be hurtful to me like that? You're just like your father, selfish, the both of you. That's how their encounters always ended. Despite the fact that they were very close, there wasn't a single get-together during which the subjects of grandchildren and self-centeredness weren't brought up. The scene looked so unbelievably familiar that for a moment Jennifer forgot she'd waken up with a stranger in her bedroom that morning, an occurrence which would have been woefully misinterpreted under different circumstances. She didn't tell her mother anything about it, of course, to avoid the ensuing panic attacks, questions about the intruder's emotional availability and financial standing, and an innocent suggestion that she should bring him around for dinner sometimes. In their imaginary conversation, Jennifer was yelling, "But Mom, you don't understand? He broke into my house." And her mother was replying, "Don't be so negative, Jennifer. You never know how destiny works. What if it was meant to be?" Jennifer had always hated the concept of predestination. What was the point of living if you could never get off script? The thought that some superior entity in the sky had already plotted and decided her entire life, and that nothing and nobody in it just happened, but was placed there, like the little plastic castle in the fishbowl, drove her mad with indignation. She had had endless arguments with her friends in college over one too many beers and the occasional joint, about the essential role of free will in somebody's life and the fact that a life script, even one that the person supposedly plotted for themselves before they were born, was the saddest thing one could ever experience. Plotting one's miseries particularly befuddled her. Who would be so self-destructive to bring suffering and disappointment in one's own life on purpose? To learn? Hogwash. The fact that now she had to contemplate the thought that not only there was a plan, but she didn't have any input in it, made her livid. She decided to confront whoever that person was who pretended to be an angel, and get to the bottom of things, to learn what kind of nonsense somebody she didn't even know decided to stuff her life with. She wondered how much of her life so far had been plotted and directed for her without her knowledge, and how many of the things she thought she really wanted were just attempts at plot twists to liven up a really boring story. There is no predestination. She decided, against the glaring light of the obvious, there can't be. I'm here, at this intersection, and I can go left, or I can go right, or I can decide not to move from the place. I don't have to choose an option just because it's there, do I? Back in her college years, this conversation would have stretched over many hours, way into the morning, spinning in tighter and tighter loops of circular argument until it collapsed under its own weight. Back then she would have reached the conclusion that believing in predestination was just that, a belief, one either entertained it or one didn't, and she didn't. Everything looked so normal that she questioned the experiences of the morning and in the end she concluded she must have dreamt the whole thing. She decided that she was way too stressed and she should rest for the rest of the weekend instead of going out with friends, like she usually did. When she turned the corner on her street, she noticed her apartment building wasn't there. It is not easy to hang on to your belief that what you see isn't real when what you see is the absence of your own home. She decided to walk by the place where she knew it was supposed to be, just to find out what it had been replaced with, but it hadn't been replaced with anything. It was as if the whole stretch of houses that were so familiar to her had been expanded to fill the entire space. She walked all the way to the end of the street and when she turned around she saw her house, from a distance, plain as day, exactly where it was supposed to be. This isn't good, she thought, wondering how on earth she was going to explain this to her friends, if they ever happened to be with her during a circumstance like this, and since she didn't know, she archived the subject for later, when she was well rested. The second she opened the door, she was overwhelmed by a spicy fragrance of dried herbs and peppercorns. I took the liberty to scatter a few surprises in your code, I hope you don't mind. Oh my God, he's still here. Yes, I am. I see that you managed to find your home. The house wasn't lost, I'm just not well, that's all. I'll sleep this off and feel a lot better tomorrow. That is if you can find your bedroom. Mobius couldn't help himself. Sorry, really bad joke. Please let me explain what's happening, because otherwise you'll get caught on the wrong foot, again and again. Jennifer sat down, resentful, not failing to notice that her bedroom wasn't there at the time anyway, so she might as well make the best of an unpleasant situation and listen, increasingly bewildered and increasingly upset to the new story of her life. So, you are telling me that you were in charge of drafting my life, and you decided to make it end at 29? She couldn't believe her ears. We don't choose the range and the gender, we just design the content. So, if you make all my moves for me, what for would I ever go to hell? Aren't my choices your responsibility? We don't design your reactions to events, just the events themselves, he clarified. Oh, so you make my life miserable but I'm not allowed to be angry about it? I don't understand why you are taking this out on me. Nobody cares about life ranges, they're going around in circles anyway, over and over and over, all that matters is not holding up the line. It matters to me. Jennifer jumped out of her chair, aggravated. Well, the least you can do is be grateful for this door number 3. You're not dead, are you? You mean I was supposed to be dead already? This is an outrage. Can't you enjoy this alternate existence, whatever form it may take? Take it from somebody who has seen way too many human life designs, this, what you have here, is a marked improvement. I would enjoy it a lot more if I consistently managed to find my own bedroom. I'm sorry about that, the code throws exceptions and I couldn't figure out what is causing them. It wasn't finished, it wasn't supposed to be deployed like this. So you messed up. I wouldn't exactly call it messed up, it was just not finished yet. Would you stop with the blaming for just one second and let me explain what's going on? Jennifer crossed her arms and sulked in silence. The option I added at the end of your code, he started. You mean the code where I was supposed to be dead already and take the soul elevator down because I didn't appreciate being pushed around? She couldn't help herself. The option I added at the end of your code puts you in some sort of quantum state, where a variety of outcomes are likely to occur, randomly. For instance, next time your apartment isn't there, just take another walk around the block, and when you get to the right place it is likely you will find it there. So, you're telling me that I'm going to have to run circles around my own home until it shows up, Jennifer snapped. If you have to put it that way, what is it with humans? They all seem so angry all the time. Mobius asked, totally innocent and situationally unaware. He continued, as if nothing happened. This applies to other things as well. You mean like having my hand occasionally run through solid objects? That's a good example. Mobius approved cheerfully. What if I fall through the Earth's core and come out in China? That's not very likely to happen, Mobius replied unconvincingly. Why not? Well, let's not focus on potential problems, we'll address things as they arise. Don't forget I already wrote the whole code, I know you'll be fine, all right? Mobius protested. Yes, if you don't mind walking through furniture. Other things you might notice, he coughed, uncomfortable. You know how humans are always constrained by their bodily contiguity? You didn't. I didn't, in fact, it seems to have resulted. As I said, the code was not complete. I just wanted to tell you this in the very unlikely case it happens, so you don't become concerned if, for instance, your midsection seems to be missing. In fact, it is not missing, it is just somewhere else at the time. You shouldn't experience any adverse effects as a result of that. This is a nightmare. Jennifer exploded. Things are bound to be a bit fuzzy at times, I'll grant you that, but all in all, what a wonderful adventure. So, not to be ungrateful, given that I'm still above ground for the foreseeable future, but what am I going to tell my family and my friends when these weird things happen? Oh, I wouldn't worry about that. The human brain can't function in the absence of explanations about the information it receives from its environment. If an explanation is not available, the mind will do one of two things. Make one up on the spot based on an assumption, even flawed, that expands on what it thinks it already knows, or simply refuse to see, hear or otherwise experience what is unfolding right in front of it. You could disassemble in the middle of the public square and people would find an explanation to reassure themselves that it didn't really happen. The next day was Monday, and, since she didn't have any idea what else to do, she decided to stick to the old schedule and go to work. The receptionist, with whom she'd worked for almost 2 years, was adamant about the fact that she'd never seen her before, and as Jennifer became more and more animated in her attempts to elicit recognition, the young girl was ready to call security. Jennifer was saved by the co-worker in the cubicle adjacent to hers, a woman with whom she had always had friendly interactions. The latter vouched for her, despite the receptionist's protests, and let her in. "This is impossible. Nobody can live like this. What's next? My mother doesn't know who I am anymore? Not to mention the boyfriend, if he ever needed an excuse," she pondered, alarmed, trying to assess how exactly she was to plan her continued existence going forward. When she arrived at her old desk, she found it covered in a simply excessive number of photographs depicting someone else's family in every happy circumstance normal life provides, starting with the traditional wedding picture. Jennifer wondered which one of the happy couple was the current occupant of her desk, at the same time getting very uncomfortable about having her private workspace so violated. For obvious reasons, she couldn't stay there, so she grabbed a chair and spent a few minutes in her coworker's cube. "So, how have you been?" the latter asked cheerfully. "Oh, my God. It's been so long. What are you doing with yourself these days? Last time you saw me, 48 hours ago, we made plans to have lunch together today," Jennifer thought, sad, but didn't say anything out loud, because there was no point. "I'm fine, thank you. You know, work, family," she responded, vague, careful not to commit herself to any verifiable details. "And you?" They made small talk for about 15 minutes, after which they ran out of subjects and an uncomfortable silence fell between them. Jennifer was grateful for this opportunity to get the heck out of there. "Well, I've got some errands to run, Lily, and you look like you're busy. I don't mean to keep you. I'm so glad we talked." "Oh, we too. What a surprise. We should do this more often, you know," Millie answered, relieved to be able to get back to her tasks. Her mind started running over the details of the pile of work on her desk, trying to figure out their order of priorities. "Call me, will you? We'll do lunch. Definitely." Jennifer smiled, shocked at her own ability to behave like all of this was normal and wondering if her face betrayed any of her internal turmoil. As she got into the elevator and pressed the down button, a familiar voice startled her from behind. "I wouldn't worry about that," Mobius reassured her. "People are usually so involved in their own lives they barely notice anything in others. Besides, you're not part of her script. As far as she's concerned, you're an NPC." "What's an NPC?" Jennifer blurted, confused. "What century were you born in? You never played a computer game in your life?" "Oh, wait, don't tell me, you were too busy. You have some cheek to blame that on me. You wrote the damn program. Couldn't you schedule some time for me to enjoy myself? I apologize about that, as I said." Mobius tried to excuse himself. "Unfinished, yeah, yeah," Jennifer continued in a really crabby mood. "What's an NPC?" she snapped. "A non-player character," Mobius answered. "You mean like an extra?" Jennifer got instantly aggravated. "Something like that. Why are you offended? It's not your life script." "No, mine just ended 2 days ago," Jennifer's irritation grew. "Obviously not." He pointed out the state of fact. Jennifer turned to him slowly, suddenly aware of the fact that this else branch in her life scenario, the one that fundamental logic was never supposed to allow, was also fully written, all the way to the bitter end. "What did you write?" She found herself screaming at the elevator wall, just as the door opened and a group of people she didn't know stared right through her, as if she wasn't there. She went to the subway to make her way home, all the while seemingly invisible and walking right through gates and turnstiles, and when she got inside her apartment, she found Mobius waiting for her on the living room couch, with a morose expression on his face. "Are you going to lurk over me permanently now?" Jennifer hissed, still furious about her dual nature of living and non-living entity. "First of all, I'm not lurking, I'm guarding.
Just because you humans can't see us, it doesn't mean we're not always here. And second, I wish I could leave you to your fabulous existence, but I'm on assignment."
"I'm not supposed to leave until this situation is resolved." Jennifer's face relaxed immediately in an irrepressible burst of laughter. "You mean you're stuck babysitting?" She barely managed to utter between breaths, and the look on Mobius' face didn't help her settle down. She continued laughing until she got tired, and when she was done, she wiped the tears off her face. Mobius was still pouting. "I want to see the script," she declared, suddenly serious. "Why? Do you understand anything about programming?" He retorted, offended. "You'll explain it to me," she continued her assertiveness streak. "You mean, Mobius, could you please explain it to me?" he corrected her. "What are you going to do if I'm impolite? Turn me into the living dead?" She retorted. "I can still change that script. You know, I did maintain the admin rights. It wouldn't kill you to be nicer. It wouldn't kill me to be more unpleasant either. Option 3, remember? Well, then, we can safely assume that you don't want to know what's in store for you in the current version of the code,
Mobius turned to a more persuasive perspective on the argument. Jennifer turned quiet, pondering her choices. Surely, in this situation, she would be better off knowing what was in the program ahead of time, even if it took the surprise factor out of her existence, especially if it took the surprise factor out of her existence. She'd had surprises before. She never liked them. She glanced out of the corner of her eye at Mobius, who was still sulking, to figure out what approach would have the best chance of success. I can still see you, you know. Humans are like ostriches. They think that if they can't see you, you can't see them. You mean like, you can see us all the time? Jennifer gulped. For the most part. That's awkward, she thought, vastly uncomfortable. Yes, it is. You were saying? Mobius turned around to face her. Jennifer's mind went back all the way to kindergarten to dig out from there the innocent and enthusiastic interest for what reality had to offer. Don't bother, he stared, displeased by her attempt at deception. Here, for what it's worth, he brought up the current version of her alternate life code on her laptop. She looked at it intently, in a desperate attempt to fake understanding. This is not your workplace, you know. You don't have to pretend you know what you're doing. I am fully aware you can't possibly understand any of this. Why are you doing this to yourself, by the way? Doing what? Putting up a facade, he continued. For the very reason facades were invented in the first place. They look better than what's underneath, she replied innocently. Not always, Mobius frowned. What would you like to know? Let's start with the range, Jennifer started, her voice stifled by fear. I'd like to know how much time I have. First, time is a very relative concept in this context, as you could easily tell from your interaction with your coworker, and second, ranges only apply to the if alive branch. You are not in it. So, what does that mean, exactly? Jennifer asked, hopeful. Does that mean I'm never going to die? Logically, you can't die because that would put you in the branch where you are no longer alive, and there you are not. Whatever. Does that mean my time here is unlimited? Jennifer continued, your time here was unlimited to begin with, because your essence, whether it is in the body or out of it, goes on forever. Can you just give me a yes or no answer, please? I hate the philosophical interpretations. Yes. And you are going to be here forever also? Not if I can help it. I'm supposed to fix your scripts so I can finally go back to my tasks, he replied, trying to convince himself that going back to rewrite boilerplate specifications was the desirable outcome of this situation. Any questions of a more practical nature, please? Can you turn me into a cat? Jennifer asked, really curious, of all the things. Mobius thought, flabbergasted by the inane human propensity to come up with preposterous hypotheticals, why would I turn you into a cat? He couldn't help himself, and regretted the question the second it left his lips. I don't know, Jennifer mumbled. If I had the ability to turn a person into a cat, I'd probably try it. Thank heavens for the wisdom of not giving humans that ability. Mobius continued, shocked. Yes, I probably could. Why? Do you want to be a cat? No, Jennifer hesitated, just wondering. This is hopeless, Mobius thought, but maintained his calm. Remind me to never underestimate the guardian angels again. Martyrs they are. How they put up with this full time is beyond me. What's that? Jennifer pointed to a random line of code, just because it looked funny to her. How on earth did you? Mobius fell back, genuinely surprised. Do you understand what that means? No. So, why did you ask about that specific line, then? He prodded. I just felt like it. What does it say? Well, I don't want to give away the surprise, but it says that in 3 years you are going to be a famous singer, he announced proudly. I don't have a singing voice, Jennifer protested. You do now. But I don't want to be a singer, Jennifer protested again, softly. Why not? It sounds like great fun to me, Mobius frowned. He had given this scenario a lot of thought and figured it would be a sure winner. Jennifer didn't know how to answer, she just shrugged, embarrassed. What do you want to do, then? Mobius asked. I don't know, I never thought about it. You mean you reached the age of 29 and you have no idea what you would like to do if you had no limitations? Pretty much, yeah, Jennifer agreed. How? How do you get to be so dispassionate about your own life? You know what? Don't answer. We'll start from scratch. If anything were possible, what would you like to do? Jennifer thought about it for a few minutes, and then suggested, in a tentative tone of voice. Well, if anything were possible, for instance, I'd like to be able to alter the properties of matter, you know, water into wine, that sort of thing, she said, blushing to the root of her hair and looking down. See inside the structure of solid objects, like a magnetic resonance machine. You want to have superpowers, Mobius replied, perplexed. Sounds a bit presumptuous when you put it that way. You can do that, can't you? Jennifer asked, starry-eyed. Of course I can do that, I'm an angel, that's not the point. Mobius protested. So, okay, he evaluated the data. At least that gives me a little background about your aspirations, however unreasonable they may be, he continued frowning. Good grief, he thought, now I have to rewrite that whole portion of the code, custom designed and with no reference to the standard specs. A fail will never let me hear the end of it, he continued out loud. Why do you want the gift of transmutation? Is there something in particular that you want to do with it? No, I just thought it could come in handy, you know, on occasion, Jennifer blushed further, if that were possible. It was just an example, it doesn't have to be that, specifically. It can be something else. Let me guess, you'd like to be able to teleport, Mobius retorted. That could be interesting also, Jennifer agreed eagerly, missing the sarcasm. Jennifer, he continued kindly, these are not things that I can usually write in a human chart, I'm not sure I could get approval for any of this. Why don't we go for something practical, like, for instance, you could be independently wealthy, you could travel, see every corner of the earth, never have another care in the world. He stopped when he noticed that Jennifer's eyes had welled up with tears. Okay, fine, I'll make a special request. I still don't understand what's wrong with a pampered lifestyle. I'm not exactly the living anymore. I'm walking through solid matter and half the time people can't even see me, she blurted between sobs. I thought if I do my chores here, and try to be good, then when I died I'd go to heaven, and there I would be free to do anything I wanted, and now I'm stuck neither here nor there, tied to this world forever. What made you think you'd be able to do anything you wanted in heaven? He replied, wide-eyed with amazement. He'd written plenty of heavenly afterlives back in the day and none of them ever featured the supernatural wonderland Jennifer apparently expected. They were mostly peaceful, loving and accepting, but otherwise pretty normal-looking. He'd always thought that making the afterlife look radically different from life on Earth would unsettle and distress the spirits. If not in heaven, then where? Jennifer continued sobbing, really disheartened by the thought that her potential paradise did not have all the bells and whistles. No, don't bring any of your stuff to me, Afael continued walking fast away from his office, determined not to get dragged into Mobius's current quandary. It's your problem, you deal with it, I don't want to hear anything about it, but I need to get your approval on something, Mobius tried to communicate his issue to Afael swiftly departing back. I'll take that as a yes, he mumbled to himself. Deal with it, Mobius, Afael's voice reverberated in the tall hallway, long after he was already far away. Jennifer, Mobius thought, it looks like it's your lucky day. He felt really uncomfortable being back there, in the vast hall of human life design, where everything looked so far removed from his current situation that there seemed to be no way he could find any solutions for it there. He was mad at his charge, although in all fairness she wasn't responsible for any of this mess. If only he hadn't succumbed to boredom and given in to unsanctioned creativity, he wouldn't be scrambling for solutions right now. What on earth does she need superpowers for? He continued ruminating. She couldn't tell transhumanism from a hole in the ground. Heck, she couldn't even figure out what to do with a normal life, and now she wants me to write her a transcendent one. Why am I even listening? The woman wants me to turn her into a cat, for crying out loud. He sat at his desk, writing and rewriting variations on the life of Supergirl, all of which he found revolting in principle. The triteness of the scenarios, born of blatantly unsophisticated aspirations, offended his design sensibilities, and after a few attempts at polishing them he threw the whole lot aside, disgusted. Okay, Jennifer, you want special, you get special, but I'm not turning you into a comics character, because I do have my standards. He started over, smiling vaguely at the story that was unfolding inside his mind. The next morning, Jennifer woke up to an eerie scene, a large hall, like one would see in a museum, but mostly empty, the way it would be between exhibits, hidden from the public eye. It was white, as much as she could tell, since it wasn't very well lit. Mobile partitions leaned against the walls and large decorative elements piled up in corners. In the dim lighting it looked more like a giant and disorganized storage room. There was wall-to-wall carpet on the floor, the generic heavy traffic loop carpet one usually finds in public spaces. She noticed that the carpet was the only object in the room that wasn't white. In her confused state between sleeping and waking, Jennifer didn't realize where she was at first, surprised to find herself laying on the floor in what looked like an abandoned warehouse, where the surroundings struck her as incongruous rather than scary. As her waking state chased away the shadows of dreaming, reason kicked in to announce that this was not where she went to sleep the night before. She got up and headed for one of the exits, which were clearly designated with lit signs hanging from the ceiling, but they all led to more exhibit space, also in the process of changing. She walked around for a while, not sure whether she was going in circles, since all the rooms looked more or less the same, except for the random piles of display materials stored here and there, away from the main path. "Try to familiarize yourself with it, you'll be here often," Mobius suggested softly, careful not to startle her. "Where are we?" Jennifer asked. She didn't seem to be disturbed by the fact that her environment had changed without warning, like the theater decors between acts. "This is unconstructed space," Mobius explained. "A sandbox of sorts, if you want. It's all yours, feel free to experiment."
"With what?"
"With creating reality," he replied. "I can create my own reality?" Jennifer asked, incredulous. To a certain degree, he agreed. "And only for yourself, don't start messing with other people's lives. In fact, you'll notice that it is difficult to do that. There are some safety protocols in place. Gravity still works, the atmosphere stays on, water still flows downhill."
"Is this?"
Jennifer hesitated to ask.
"Real?"
"That all depends on how you define reality. It is one level up from what you would normally consider the world as you know it, but I can assure you it's every bit as real. Let's say it has one more dimension than you're used to."
"How many levels are there?"
Jennifer asked.
"An infinite number."
"And have you seen all of them?"
"Of course not, hence the word infinite. No matter how many one has seen, there is always one more," Mobius replied annoyed.
"On this level you can create blueprints, if you want to call them that, of reality. Prototypes, models, schematics."
"How on earth do you create reality schematics?"
Jennifer asked with a bewildered look on her face.
"Let me demonstrate," Mobius said. "Do you like cats?"
Jennifer loved cats, and the question was mostly rhetorical, since Mobius had been the one who wrote liking cats into her script.
"Let me think, a Siamese, no, an Egyptian black cat," he kept thinking out loud, while the outline of a cat, no bigger than Jennifer's palm, started taking shape on the carpet, right in front of her feet. It looked like a little plastic toy, but it was clearly a black cat, and it sported a large golden collar around its neck, to symbolize its superior status. "They used to be worshipped like gods back in the day, it seems they never forgot it," he joked.
"Pick it up."
She looked at the little cat toy, not sure what to do with it. It didn't look special in any way, even though it had materialized out of thin air.
"What am I supposed to do with it?"
she asked.
"Keep it for now, you'll see when the time is right. Now, let me explain what this space is. Everything you create in here will seep into the lower reality sooner or later. It isn't always true to your prototype, there are directions and constraints that polish your concept and infuse it with a variety of influences, but it should be easily recognizable, even in its altered form. When people first arrive here, they are tempted to create material goods of some sort, because they think within the boundaries of the reality they are used to, but your blueprints can be for anything. Anything that goes through your head will take shape here, in one way or another. And no, you're not allowed to subjugate your boyfriend's will, so that he behaves the way you want him to. It's against spiritual laws." Since Jennifer was just planning on doing that, she didn't object to the chastising. He continued, "The rule is very simple, you don't do anything to another person that you wouldn't like done to you. Everything you do will return to you multiplied. See the advantage of doing good? What if I don't want a specific thing returned to me multiplied?"
Jennifer asked innocently.
"You mean like you don't really want three castles in France?"
Mobius clarified.
"Something like that," Jennifer replied.
"Well, we'll get to that later. In the beginning, just make sure you don't get three thunderbolts hitting you in the head," Mobius warned.
"This is also a good place to learn how to control your quantum state. That could be useful, right?"
"Useful in what way?"
"So you can choose, for instance, whether or not you want to be visible or walk through solid matter," he explained.
"You mean I can do that at will?"
Jennifer jumped at the chance, hopeful.
"In time.
Like everything, it takes practice. You'll get the hang of it eventually."
"You said other people, there are other people in this space?"
Jennifer asked.
"If you want them to show up, they might, but everybody has their own sandbox, where they can do whatever they wish. This is your playground.
Why does it look so desolate?"
Jennifer looked around, uncomfortable. The space had the distressing look of a messy party hall in the crude light of the morning, after all the guests have left.
"Because that's how you feel, Jennifer. This is your state of mind. If you don't like it, change it. You can't exist exclusively to execute other people's orders, no matter how much you care about them.
Don't you have anything that is precious to you, regardless of what anybody thinks? Not really, Jennifer answered, without thinking. Do you want me to rephrase the question? Mobius frowned, doing his best not to lose his temper. Jennifer looked at him, confused. Assuming that nobody told you what to do or what to think, what would your life look like? The confused expression on Jennifer's face made it clear she had no understanding of the concept. I see, he sighed, resigned. Let's try another approach. It's Saturday morning, you are all by yourself and you have no chores. What do you do? I call my mother, she replied. No. Mobius snapped. You're not allowed to call anybody, not your mother, not your girlfriends, not your parish priest. You mean I have to be all alone? Jennifer started whimpering pitifully, but Mobius didn't relent. That's right, all alone. Poor Jennifer. He mocked, but I don't want to be all alone. Jennifer protested, outraged. Assume you're dead. But you said. She started again. Jennifer, surely all those years you spent in college familiarized you with the concept of a hypothetical argument. Just assume there is nobody else to fill up your schedule for the foreseeable future and come up with something to keep you occupied. Anything? Jennifer played for time. You mean it doesn't have to be something useful? There is no such thing as something useful. You assign usefulness to an object or activity, based on your own mindset. Stop worrying about giving the wrong answer. There is no right or wrong answer here. I see meaningless slogans haven't gotten lost on their way to heaven, Jennifer thought. She hated this fake encouragement to express one's true opinion so much. It was always insincere, always condescending, and she couldn't remember a single time when speaking her mind did not result in a consequence that damaged her interests in some way. Never mind, Mobius frowned again. I see there is a lot of damage in this area. It would be unwise to press on it right now. How did the standard specifications result in a complete wipeout of human will and dignity was not a problem he was eager to look at, but there was something very wrong about them, something that wreaked desolation on the very core of the soul. No wonder she didn't mind checking out early. If I believed I had no freedom to choose my own path, or even know what that path was, I wouldn't mind it either. But she was right, there was no freedom, not with a script to follow and somebody else to write it. He felt guilty for a moment for being what he was, and then realized that the reason humans had life scripts in the first place was they couldn't see enough levels of existence to allow them to design their own lives. He lingered for a moment between the moral obligation to guide humankind, and the option of letting it run fast and loose, with no rudder, towards haphazard, potentially devastating results, and at the end of the comparison he couldn't figure out which choice was worse. The ultimate sucker's bet, if he ever saw one. The atmosphere had turned dreary and Jennifer had that absent look on her face, the one he noticed whenever life got the better of her. If she didn't like what was happening to her, she just let her body run on autopilot and sent her soul only God knows where. Mobius decided to lighten up the mood. Would you like to experience what it's like being a cat? He generously offered. Not right now, Jennifer replied disheartened. How do I go back to normal? Just countdown from 7, he gave up.